Sessions You're On with Candace,
Delia,
and Jez.
Here live in the heart of Seoul. Today we have a special guest with us. He is a multi-talented man, original from North Kakalaki. North Carolina, but he's been living in Seoul for quite some time now. He is a graphic designer, a writer, a community leader, and an all-out creative, and he's been our mentor for the bulk of our time here in Korea. Please welcome to the episode Mr. Marcus Corbany.
Hey. Yeah, what's going on, people? What's going on, Soul Talk Sessions? How you doing?
So you guys heard all about us in a couple episodes ago, how we came into Korea, how we feel about being here, and we decided to bring our favorite black man.
Come on.
That's right.
Come tell us
he life. Just got voted our favorite just
I just
now.
Got voted up.
That's new.
So tell us a little bit about your struggles and your life here in Korea. Give us a little background. How long you been here?
I've been here 10 years. It'll be 10 years next month.
Wow.
And so... Actually, it'll be 11 since the first time I stepped foot in Korea. I came as an exchange student. But yeah, I've been in Korea. You want me to just talk about Korea? Or what you
I mean, just like,
I mean, your whole life story.
So I grew up in the farms.
No,
in the country.
Okay, bring it forward.
One stoplight.
But that's a big transition, though, growing up in a small place and moving into Seoul.
Yeah, I'm a country boy, actually, growing up. I grew up in the mountains in North Carolina, and then I moved to Korea back in 2008. I felt like God was calling me here. I originally came in 2007 because I was dating a Korean-American girl, and she came here. And I thought she was the Neo. I thought she was the one.
And, so you followed her all the way across the
that's
world.
That's dedication.
I did. I'm down for the cause.
Okay.
And so,
I like that.
that's a shout-out to all the men in our lives who are thinking about it. Just do it.
Just do it.
Go ahead.
I like
God.
That.
Go ahead.
I like that.
You got the A-OK for this. Go ahead.
So, well, over the past 10 years or so, you've had a lot of experiences here. Do you want to share maybe some of your most valuable experiences that stand out?
I mean... When I first came, I was just doing music and just new to faith and leading people. And so I think my most valuable experience was just leading my community, the Itaewon community, just growing a lot as a leader. I was 22 when I first became a pastor, 25 when I took over.
Wow. That's pretty young. That's
25,
really young.
26. Yeah. Learned a lot through that. I think that was probably my most valuable experience. Of course, getting married 3 years ago, you know, I gotta put a shout out right there because she's gonna be listening, wondering, where's my name? Where's my name? Anna Corbany, you know.
Hey, Anna.
I think just throughout, I grew a lot as a graphic designer. I've grown a lot as an artist. I haven't picked up my music as much as I wanted to, but I think at least as a leader and as an artist, I've grown a lot.
Yeah. So you have quite the portfolio as a graphic designer.
Yeah.
Have you found that living in this city has been inspirational for you, like compared to back in the States in North Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, in North Carolina, you're in your car everywhere you go. You can't just walk the streets. But that's something that I started to do a lot when I first came, was I would walk the streets of Itaewon or Seoul and go to different fashion shows, go to different music venues.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to get from being in this. And a city, I think Seoul as a city just has a certain essence to it.
Like, yeah.
It's just got this
it
flavor when you're walking the street that I feel like I'm going to miss if I'm not in this kind of environment. So,
do you feel like leaving this environment is going to cause those kind of inspirations and that kind of motivation to stagnate, or do you feel like you're going to be able to cultivate that outside of this environment?
That's a good question. I think, I mean, we're going to hopefully be in like the D.C. area, so I'm looking at feeling what D.C. is all about.
And yeah,
this is a good spot.
It's a different vibe.
It's very
but
different.
It's still,
but it's a good spot.
I mean, all I've walked through was like all the monuments. Trying to go to the African American History Museum.
Yeah, did you make it?
There you go.
Didn't make it. You will. Ended up at the Smithsonian.
You got plenty of time.
They got an African American exhibit there. That was
they
close.
Did.
You were close.
Oh yeah, I walked through that. Walked through that quickly, and didn't have a chance to go.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you think you'll miss the most about here, about Korea?
I mean, the people. I mean, I think the relationships I've built here, there's just so much love, I think, being here in Korea.
Yeah.
And I think not just from the people that I've grown in relationship with, but I think actually being in Korea as a black man, it's like a different experience. Like, I think somebody said it to me before when they were talking about going back to the States. He's like, you know, you ain't special there.
You don't stand out right. as much. And
people ain't going to be looking at you all day long.
Right.
But I'm going to miss that. I'm also going to miss, like, the culture. I think Korea, they have such a hunger to grow in, like, the kind of culture that's cultivated in the States.
Mm. Yeah.
And so there's a mix of so much here I get a chance to pull from.
Yeah.
And so I feel like everything I experience here in Korea is at least a step ahead from what I'm going to see in the States. So
yeah,
I'm going to miss that.
True. But you've been here for 10 years. Have you seen it grow to the point where it is now? Or do you feel like it's always had that edge?
Nah, in the beginning, it didn't have that edge at all. Like, I think when I first came, everything was still quite... I mean, Korea's very, like, a homogenous culture.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's about being Korean.
Yeah, very traditional.
Yeah, everything's all about the tradition, the Confucianism and stuff. But I think since I've been here, I've noticed, like, the openness to whether it's mm-hmm. hip-hop culture, black culture, mm-hmm. or just what's happening around the world, mm-hmm. especially the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
stuff
I agree.
Stuff is just crazy.
Yeah.
Good. And so, even the artists that come through, you wouldn't have seen like somebody like Daniel Caesar coming.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point.
Like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
So being at his concert, I mean, there was still this weird mix because people are like not sure how to react to his music, so people are just kind of like standing there and staring at him.
Mm-hmm.
So Korea still got some ways to go, but they're making that leap.
But even on the other side, for artists who want to come to Korea as well, like. It goes both ways. So I think that the outside world is starting to open up to what Korea and what Seoul is, and even the music scene here, and want to be a part of that and influence that by their presence as well.
Absolutely.
So shout out to Daniel Caesar for coming
Asian
through.
Their Asian tour in South Korea isn't always on their list of places to visit.
Yeah.
It has
Tokyo
been more so.
Twice.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
But artists are beginning to open themselves up to coming here to perform and to have those concerts in those venues, you know? So that's
multiple
been really
days
cool.
Too. Yeah, do multiple a Tuesday times. And a Wednesday.
Yeah, they're starting to realize that there's more here.
Yeah. Thanks to us. You see what we did?
We take credit for all that, y'all.
You've been here for 10 years or longer, present right. company included.
I mean, when I first came, it's a side, but when I first came, I remember, you know that Jaquan song, Tipsy?
Yes. Right? Wow.
They would take, like, black hip hop songs and would, like, copy them verbatim.
Yeah,
like,
they will.
And you'd
they
be listening to it and like, you think Tipsy, and I'm like, oh. And I'm like, oh snap, and then all of a sudden they start speaking Korean. I'm like
what?
They didn't try to change none of it, right? You know, I'm not going to say, but it was one artist who used to give it
don't use no names.
Time. And I was like, that's illegal if they ever found out. But nobody was coming to Korea
Nobody was coming here.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. They were getting away with it.
Yep.
So now that you've been here for 10 years, over the last 5 years, you mentioned it's changed a lot here in Korea. But there's a lot that's been going on in America, especially for the black man. How have you been able to deal with that while you've been here? How's it affected you emotionally?
Oh, we're going emotional.
This is heavy all of a sudden.
We went from Jaquan to
Tipsy to
to just vulnerable.
Just get transparent.
Yeah.
I think for me, I think in the beginning when I first came, I mean, being black is something that you experience no matter where you go.
Mm-hmm.
I think being in Korea, it's just something that's kind of hit. It's straight in your face as soon as you get on the subway, wherever you're at. And so, I don't know, I think going through my time here, it's just been really difficult emotionally for me to experience everything that's happened in America.
Yeah.
Because you feel connected. Like, you don't cast off your blackness just because you come to Korea. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
stop needing the same hair products just because you
know. We know.
Right? We know.
You know, like, and so I think for me, it's been really difficult, because not only do you go through the aspect of feeling so connected to what's happening in the States,
yeah,
and feeling pained by it.
Yeah.
There's,
yeah,
no separation. Like when I look on the news and I read about certain things that happen, I feel it just as if I was at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the major difference is I don't have the same amount of allies or people who are there to share in that pain.
To
talk to you about it.
To talk about it.
Right.
To know what's, to be able to look at somebody and know, you know what
they
I'm
understand.
Going through. You know,
yeah.
So then how do you cope with feeling that level of pain in an isolated environment?
Well,
did you cope?
I mean, I think in Korea, I mean, this is kind of going into like the racial constructs of Korea in general for an expat, but I think because in Korea everyone is an expat who's born, that redefines what it means for Korean American who comes.
Yeah.
So they all of a sudden experience, or they re-experience what it's like to be an other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also for my white friends, they come, and whiteness is all of a sudden redefined for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before, it's not something that you experience when you're in the States, because everyone looks like you, the power structure is all geared towards you. So, and so all of a sudden now they are experiencing what it's like to be an other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in those shared common experiences, a lot of my closest friends who aren't black per se have been able to empathize and connect with what I'm going through in the midst of my grieving. That I don't think maybe would happen as much if we were in the States. And that's not to say that anything wrong about any of my friends that aren't black, but that's helped me to cope. So being able to have those kind of allies that are unexpected. But then I think also, like even my wife is Korean, but she has been married to me. She's getting connected to what this experience is like, and she's able to help me work through that.
So as a person who has like a significant platform in a public community, what has it been like for you to experience these things personally, but then also speak on it? And using your platform to kind of like educate, but also like communicate the emotion behind it, and kind of show people what it's been like for you and for the black community here.
That's good.
I think I go through, like, there's an aspect that has been a great, like, privilege. It's been really good to do it. I think getting up and preaching, I think I went up and spoke about, like, the elephant in the room, talking about, like, yo, we got to talk about race. We got to talk about police violence. We cannot skip this over.
Right. Man, I loved how you handled that in that day, because I think it was
it was really tricky. Yes.
And I think it was right after, not that far after Ferguson. So for a lot of us in the room, we were
it was really raw.
Yeah. I think Jazz and I had talked about it the night before, and we can't help but to envision our brothers, right?
Yeah.
And so we were carrying all that. So I knew, like, in my own circle, I couldn't speak on it because I was so heavy. So to watch you walk that line of being able to educate without, like, pushing out a group of people who couldn't understand, while still being sensitive to how you felt and how people who feel heavy are carrying it, it was beautifully executed.
Thank you for that. I mean, I think it's difficult because as a pastor, as a church leader, I'm not just the black people's pastor in the room. I'm everybody's, right? So if I get up there and I'm just connecting with just the pain, which I need to, because I'm hurting up there.
Yeah.
I'm bleeding all over the place. But I also realize, like, we need each other to walk through this together.
Yeah.
And that, so I was walking through, like, the pain. I was really jacked up. I was crying everywhere I was going. I was walking around. I was sitting in staff meetings. I mean, we were in that meeting together, right?
Like, we both cried.
So, Jazz, what do you feel? And Marcus, what do you feel? And I'm like, oh. And so we're going through, like, I'm going through those feelings of, do I feel safe? Do I feel safe enough? Like, is this a feeling that's going to be validated? Or is it going to be, or am I going to all of a sudden have to, can I be Marcus in pain rather than the black guy in pain? And am I like the model who's like representing all black people in my pain? Or can it be something where you see me as human rather than an object?
Yeah.
And then us walk through it together. Because that's, I think, the major problem. So trying to preach and speak in a way that helps people connect with that individual pain. I mean, I think that's the only way that we could go forward.
I think in this whole conversation, that's what's missing a lot of times, is connecting with humanity. Because in the media, it's like objects and animals, and like we're not seen as just people, you know. But for those of us who do have black men in our lives, fathers, brothers, cousins, uncles, it hits home every single time. And it's like, how can other people not feel this? Like, how can they not see what we see, you know, or try to see, you know?
Yeah, I saw my little brother. I saw him right then. When Walter Scott happened, when all these different things happened, I saw my uncles. I have relatives that look like these different men.
That's the thing, right? They look like family.
They look like family.
I think Delia too, like, you've got brothers. Did you have that same sentiment when you saw these people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my brother is a young man who lives and works in New York City, you know, and every day I think about, you know, what could happen, you know, and that's a conversation that I have with my dad as well. And I have also two smaller brothers, and you know, I have cousins and friends. I have friends. And it is scary. And I have friends who work in law enforcement, and I have friends who don't, you know. And so it's always that dynamic as well, to try to understand both sides, and try to understand what the fear is on both ends, and also kind of how we move forward, you know, like you were saying, together. You know, it's something scary, and it hurts, and it is painful. You know, like, you're always crying at meetings, I was crying at home. we're just all kind of a mess. And you just have to kind of figure out how to keep walking, you know, as best as you can. Sometimes I feel like I'm crawling, to be honest. I feel like sometimes I'm just crawling through the mud. But I'm still moving. I'm trying to, at least.
So one thing you mentioned earlier is that you're a man of many talents, and music has been something that's kind of had to fall back a little bit. But now that you're going back to the States and getting more time to just think and do what you want to do, do you feel like music's going to come back to the forefront?
Yes.
answer for you. Wait. What was your stage name?
I'm gonna insert a YouTube clip because he had bars and it's still out there.
What did Mick say about that? Bring it back up.
It's out there in the internet.
He got bars.
So it was Mighty.
Just Mighty, not Mighty something.
It started out because, like, so I was in this group. Me and my friends in high school, we would rap because we had nothing better to do. And then one of our friends, we had this friend who was wealthy, and so he had this studio basement. And so we started rapping. They would just call me Mac because my
initials. Your initials.
And so there was Mac, and then it was Mac C, and then it was Mighty Mac C. And I was like, all right, let's simplify this. It's just Mighty.
That is funny. The evolution of Mighty.
I think I like the Mighty Maxi. I think that's probably
right. It was like Mighty Mouse.
That's what I was thinking.
So I was like, all right, let's just leave it at Mighty, and so that's where it stayed. And but then I was still making music when I first came to Korea. I was still doing stuff, still putting stuff out, still trying to produce a bit here and there for friends in the States. But yeah, when I go back, I want to explore that. I don't want to just leave that be.
I think that'd be good, though, because then you'll be able to get and have different experiences that you'll be able to tie in all together, so you'll still have what you've seen here and experienced and kind of taken in from Seoul, from the city of Seoul, but then also the city that you're going into. And then it's going to be, I think, a very different kind of artistry that you'll be able to bring out once you start kind of getting your feet wet again.
There's a depth that you can add to it too, because you've got
and you're in a completely different life stage than when you first got here. So now even this new life stage that you're in will add so much more richness to that.
Of course.
What's an album you've heard that can basically describe your current life stage?
An album,
or if it's just a song, because I got albums.
Oh, I got playlists. Well, actually, that is a good question.
I have albums.
Because, like, for me, anything think it's gonna sound wack, it's gonna date me, but me and Jay see eye to eye on life. And so I'm like, right now I'm at a Kingdom Come album stage.
Okay.
I ain't hit 444 yet.
I was about to say that was my next question.
In my heart, I gotta go through some things to get to 444. Right. I'm at like Kingdom Come. I used to be at the Blueprint, you know. So where are you at right now?
Think of an artist. I used to identify myself so much with Pharrell.
Yeah, of course. We see that.
I just used to, like, you know.
Your inner Pharrell. So what's your Pharrell song?
I mean, I would go from N.E.R.D. and I would listen to all that, and then I would go from fronting on Neptune.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm vibing too much with what he's doing now. I think.
What? You don't like the new album?
He's too creative.
Yeah, I think he's like, it's a little too pop. It's a little too like.
It is different.
Like, I like N.E.R.D. I think I like Lemon. I like some of the things
they're
doing.
Lemon was really good.
Lemon is good.
I just like that Rihanna verse.
No, Rihanna killed it. I was like, girl, hold up.
When I listened to Rihanna, I was in the office. I was in the church office. I was going in.
I don't even know how to
She did her thing.
That verse.
She did her thing on it.
I mean, right now, I don't know if I'm even like a lot of hip hop stuff. Right now, I'm kind of just taking a break from that. I think I'm mostly just Daniel Caesar right now. And listening.
That's a good album.
That track, Blessed, is my track right
That's
now.
That's your track.
That's a good one.
I love Best Part. It's my favorite track.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the clip that you posted, right?
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh.
At the concert,
my song.
I wanted to be there so bad.
Yeah, he's so talented. But he's a little interesting at times. I think sometimes his music gets a little, I don't even know the right word for it. Yeah.
Emotional.
Yeah.
That's Caesar in him, though. Ain't his mama the gospel singer, Caesar?
Shirley Caesar?
I think. Ain't he from that family?
He is.
Let's do some research, but I think I heard it somewhere.
I
think he's from that family.
Well, if you do know, let us know in the comments. Just go ahead and
answer
that question. Comments for us.
Well, Marcus Corbin, it has been an amazing honor to have you here on Soul Talk Sessions with us, giving us that male perspective on the things that we also experience.
Yeah, trying to.
And those brothers, you know, they need to make the move.
Literal move.
Make the move.
Only 6,000 miles.
Make the move. You know,
only.
Move.
Thank you so much for coming.
All right, as always, you guys can find us on all of our social media platforms. We on the gram now, so come by, say what's up, leave a comment there.
Share it, put it out there.
Follow us on SoundCloud. Check out those other episodes. We'll be back to you guys next week for some more of that good.
You gotta stop saying that.
Until next time.
All right,
until next time.